Die Samstagskracher bei Netto Markendiscount.
90 Jahre Netto.
Und zum Jubiläum Müller Milch.
In verschiedenen Sorten.
400 bis 500 Milliliter für...
1 Euro?
Nee, für nur 55 Cent.
Dann geh doch zu Netto.
Don't try to run, don't try to hide.
What's up, fool? What's up, fool? Podcast. What's up, fool? Podcast. We should have bells, bro. Like we're going mambo.
Absolutely.
We need a cowbell.
We need a cowbell.
More cowbell.
We have more cows than bells. Hey.
Longhorn.
We have Beto Duran here from Beto Duran Sports, ESPN, and HBO late at night boxing, bro.
Thank you. Glad to be back, and you scared me when you did the what's up, fool. I've never seen it that up close and personal.
Oh, bro. Wait for you go laugh.
Yeah, man, like Robin Leach, man. Right up there, man.
Oh, rest in peace, Robin Leach.
What's rest up? in peace, everybody. Yeah, everybody died.
So Robin Leach left us the rich and famous. I don't know why.
That was pretty good.
That's the only one I knew, bro. I used to do it all the time.
Champagne wishes and caviar dreams.
I did it one time, bro. I was begging on somebody. Look at this fool here. Lifestyle of the appalling unknown. Chocolate wet dreams.
Under the 6th Street Bridge, man.
Chocolate dreams. Emma, are we able to get the YouTube screen on the video screen?
This is a fancy studio, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
if possible.
If not, it's okay.
It was way different from when I met you guys at Dodger Stadium top deck.
Oh, that little corner?
Yeah, that was cool.
That little nook.
Oh, we had to sneak in, and I was so bad at sneaking in.
It was good, though. We didn't have to sneak in. We just had to
go. Well, we just should have told them. I told them everything at the gig, which was dumb.
Then did you buy a sweater, a Dodger sweater?
I don't remember, but maybe.
It was like three, 4 years ago.
You're afraid of sneaking in, shit. Mexican, we're not afraid of sneaking in.
No, we're there. We sat down.
Not a podcast. Black people are good at sneaking out.
But you know what? How Eleanor felt? You said how Eleanor felt when you ran into Dice and her. And she cut the line.
Let's get back to that. Forget about
what
that.
What happened?
Oh, man.
What were you saying?
Well, how she felt. She said she felt like she just... you know, hit a puppy or whatever she said. She felt awful for
really
cutting in line.
Oh, because every time, like, my boarding pass says primary gold ruby.
Ooh,
so I could get in line with first class, but even though I'm not going first class, my seat's way in the back, but I get to go with them. So anybody traveling with me can come with me or take a risk to come with me. So she was like boarding Eleanor from the Comedy Store podcast. She was boarding number 6, last, bro.
Group 6.
Her seat is by the restroom. You're gonna say hello to her on the way to the restroom.
You have to check your bag. You're gonna take it. There's no more
space
after that.
Where's my cane, Eleanor?
Yeah. So,
oh, Eleanor carried it.
I told her come with us.
Oh, okay.
Come with us.
She opens for Dice.
I told her come with us. Well, I'm afraid. So she came with us and she got in. She goes, wow, man, I feel like I got away with it. I feel like I just shoplifted.
Yeah, shoplifted.
For jumping in with you on the boarding pass?
That was her biggest crime ever.
Oh, jeez.
Right.
So we're hanging out, fool, and like we see this old-ass fool, dog. Like
very old.
Like we see this dude that, okay, he used to lift weights, but not anymore. And he was wearing like some shants, right?
Shants. I guess he had a muscle shirt too, right?
Yeah, he had a black tank top. And you're wearing those long shorts, you know, like those cholos wear.
The dickies.
Like those cholos wear to go to the gym.
With the white socks all the way up.
Yeah, man, exactly. But he had low socks.
Baggy, dog.
He had low socks with shorts?
Bro, he looked like he was just ready for a rave.
Oh, jeez.
What's up with those hiking boots, man?
And it was a Dice man, bro. And was like,
no!
Hey. He was walking with Eleanor. And we walk, you know me, bro. I don't care. But I get shell-shocked. So I get starstruck.
I told that.
And I said, what's up, Dice man? Man, we saw you in
before you knew him?
Adventure.
Right now.
Oh, right now?
Pay attention?
No.
Right, we saw him
Sunday,
airport.
Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday. Right now. We saw him right
on the Sabbath.
So I said, what's up, Dice Man? Me and Rodrigo, we just saw you at the Miami Improv. You got a stand ovation. And then for your Lambada Bing.
I had a fun with that.
Lambada Bing. And Eleanor looked at us like, no, he looked at Eleanor like, who are these guys? Do I know them?
I'm going to go look for neck pillows, okay? I'll be back.
Yeah, I'm going to look for neck pillows. And she said, another neck pillow? So this fool comes back, and the Andrew Dice Clay, the Dice Man, he's like hiding over there, like by the magazines, or he don't want to get recognized by us again. But this fool passes by. What do you say, Doug? You yelled it out.
Dice! Dice is complete excitement. Unbelievable. Dude, it fucking shook the fucking airport.
Fool, you did that?
If we yelled so loud, I laughed so hard, like I was on the floor, I was laughing. This black fool that was working in formation came up to me with a wheelchair. Sir, you all right? Like he would have put me in a wheelchair, bro.
Hey, fool. And then I seen the Dice Man go, you know what, Eleanor, that's what I get for being famous. Got lunatics yelling my name here. I can't even go out there no more.
You don't know him, Rodrigo?
Nah, not personally. I met him a couple times. But you know,
I remember, that always forgets.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, he's one of those guys that never remembers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, hey, nice to meet you for the 8,000th time.
So,
that's kind of scary, though, to do that. So, isn't it?
Nah.
No. Supposedly he likes to fuck around, dog. Yeah. So
D.L.
here's our taking.
We see D.L. Hughley show up with his handler. You know, some guy that works with the him
assistant,
on assistant. That fool look like a Mexican Navy SEAL.
Hughley has a Mexican Navy SEAL.
I don't know.
A hell of an airport.
Turn out fucking he's gonna
be
a Peruvian.
Bodyguard handler. You never know. Who do we know? He could be the opener.
I know. I do comedy, guys.
Because I know, I'm also a juggler. So. But he was a good guy. He was cool.
Cool as fuck.
So, D.O., we're talking to D.O. Hughley, and we're talking to D.O. Hughley. Yeah, man, we just saw the Dice Man over there, man. They didn't want to shake our hand. And we're just talking about Dice Man. So, this fool's...
This fool goes round two, dog.
Right?
Yeah, dog.
He gets near my ear, Rodrigo. Fuck, I couldn't believe it. He goes, oh, first of all, nobody knows who the fuck Johnny Roque is, right? Right?
Johnny Roque.
He's just hanging out. He's just with us, right? By the way, Johnny Roque had a podcast with fucking...
Nick Guerra.
If you can hashtag, nobody knows who the fuck Johnny Roque is. Hashtag that shit. So, wait, you know, like, he introduces himself to Eleanor like this. Hey, you want an edible? Like, he has edible candies.
You never met her before?
Never!
What's wrong with this?
I know, man. I'm like, this creep.
He just walks up and says...
It's like walking up to somebody and go, hey, man, you want
to... At the airport.
You want to... What are those candies called? The ones that are very mushy?
Taffy? Or caramel?
They're like German.
Starburst?
No. They're like a little bear. Jelly bear.
Oh, gummy bears.
Gummy bears.
Okay. And like walking up to somebody and going, you want like a little gummy bear? And that gummy bear come out of your pocket, the last one. Do it have lint on it?
Get away from
your hand all sweaty.
That's like the end of Ferris Bueller when Jeffrey Jones, the principal, sits down to that girl and she says, you want a gummy worm?
Yes.
It's all soft from being in my pocket. Yeah.
So that's the beginning of their bad morning, right? Running into us. So Rodrigo said, round two, watch this.
No. Come on.
Rodrigo told
he's
me.
Like he's like my idol.
I'm relentless.
But isn't he like me?
He's our idol, bro. Anyway, so every time I walk up to him from far away, even if he's a million miles away, I go, hickory.
My dick and swallow slow.
He never turns around.
Never, dog.
Ever. He's like motionless, bro. He's like throwing arrows. He's like if you guys material. So this dude, Rodrigo, tells me, hey, bro, watch this. I'm a page his motherfucking name right now on a loudspeaker.
No, you're not.
What's his real name?
Andrew Clay Silverstein.
That's his name?
Best thing to come out of Brooklyn since chocolate. Man. So
I'm walking off sleepy, bro. The neck pillow.
Tired dog.
And big ass accounting glasses.
He has those grandma glasses.
He has those glasses like the ones
Liz
that.
Taylor
or
some shit. Jackie O'Neill.
They're like tinted colors, right?
No, man. He has those.
It's like the ones you get when you get glaucoma drops in your eye.
Check out Lisa.
No? They're like they're like gazelles, but they belong to that lady that Henri Ruby.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
He looks like he sells jewelry or some shit.
They're covering the whole face.
His glasses, dude. His big old fucking bug eye glasses.
With chance.
His glasses look like the glasses that Robert De Niro wore at the end of Casino.
Yeah.
Oh!
Like Frank Rothstein. Mm-hmm.
Frank Rothstein. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know what's going on,
right?
Pit
bossy.
I try to cut my tights here, but I'm trying to disappear. I'm talking to D.L. Hughley.
You left me out here with the wolves.
I don't know where Rodrigo went. He was standing in line. I think he paged his name in front of him.
No,
you didn't.
Dude, I'm standing in line to check my bag, get a free bag check. And then there's three people in front of me. I'm like, fuck, dude, hurry up already. So I go, yeah, could you page your friend? I tell him to meet his friends at a gate C12. What's his name? Andrew Clay Silverstein. Andrew Clay Silverstein, please come to the gate C12 and meet your friends. They're waiting for you. And it goes twice, dude. So I was like, oh, dude, let me check my bag. I forgot, dog. You know, I'm excited right now, bro. Well, I start checking my bag. I don't know what's going on, Eleanor. Are they going to take away my status? What's, this is important.
My status.
Where's my passport at? Andrew, I got your ID of you. No, no, no. This is big. Dude, what'd you put in my bags?
Was he totally serious?
Yeah, dude, I'm fucking behind me dying. Because supposedly the Dice Man, he likes to play gags on people, right? I'm a goofball, right? Not tonight, dog. Oh, so I get my shit and take off. Oh, I go there by Felipe, dog. Fucking dying, dog.
I don't know what's going on.
Hey, he didn't even know that.
He's well, like, he cut ties with you. He wants nothing to do with you right now.
So, he didn't know. So then, I don't know. Comes up to me like, I know it with you guys.
You fucked up.
You okay. Fucked up.
You fucked up big time.
You fucked up big time.
And he's all,
you don't know what you started.
All right. You're going to get it.
That's Eddie Griffin.
You're going to get it, okay? You're not going to get it today, but one day you're going to get it. I'm like, who got it today, doc? All right. All right. He's popping off at the mouth. How you doing, DL? You want to be on my podcast? I hooked him up, dog.
Yeah. So now
the DL, missing link.
So now DL, listen to it, man.
Who's all laughing with this, dog?
Andrew Dice Clay's personality and demeanor changed after they fucking made a pit of chick on his ass, dog. Like he felt, you had your pants pulled down or your trunks in front of everybody, then you put them up, everybody laughs, but you go back to your friends, and you know you're going to get somebody.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
In junior high, when the PE, they take your pants shorts down.
Same with us, just looking at us, plotting, what can he do? How could he get back to us?
These Mexicans look strong.
But he goes, you guys, Eleanor
said, big old Mexican.
Eleanor said, you guys don't know what you did, man. You got to butt out the kid in Andrew.
In a good way or a bad
way?
In a good way.
No.
Oh, okay.
In a good way. Because
he felt playful at that point?
Hell yeah.
He was cool.
He got.
Yeah, dude.
But nobody messes with him, right?
Nah, nobody does. He does a gag. So he talks to DL and
Keep it a Dice Man. He played a trick on somebody one time. We saw him. Remember he had all the comedians that were from his era mess with Robert Abadiah and they put all the chairs together.
Yeah.
So he can't walk away from the stage. He has to stay
up
there.
Old guy from
that was
kind of
fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's mean.
He deserved that though.
Those were asshole face days, dog.
Those are asshole face days.
Yeah.
So, and then I get on the plane and I pass Felipe and then that Dice Man's in the corner. I look at him, Dice. Then that pulls out,
with his big old glasses. Yeah.
And he laughed, dude. So I'm all right, cool. We're good.
Because you know you're a comedian.
Rodrigo is never happier.
Did you know you're a comedian or you just thought you were some
guy? Yeah, they introduced me. But he's like, whatever, I'm the best in the world. Who are these guys?
So that's his name, Silverstein?
Andrew Clay Silverstein. Is that actually named after the president, Andrew Clay?
He had just performed in a casino.
Tulsa.
In Tulsa, like. Ooh. And D.L. Hewley had done a casino too, but it was one of the hell gates, Lisa, where there's no flight going there.
Yeah.
So he had to drive and almost 2 hours to the gig.
Deep in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Deep, bro.
Let's move quickly through this.
But to the Rand, what's up, bro?
What's up, Felipe?
Leave that in the fight.
I'm working the Canelo Triple G fight. I will be there that week. So I'm working for I work for Golden Boy, and I'm going to be doing the online broadcast. So, like, if you're watching at home, you can watch Jim Lampley and Max Kellerman. We're watching them. But they also have now where you can buy the pay-per-view for your phone if you're at quinceañera or wedding, whatever. Instead of getting the illegal bootleg streams, you can now get a legit stream that's not going to break down, and I'll be the voice of that one.
But they're going to sell you everything nowadays for these fucking pay-per-view fights. But they're going to sell you people buying popcorn.
Pretty much.
It's crazy, man.
And I'm trying to get you there on Friday for the weigh-in.
So yeah, weigh-in?
That'd be cool.
Because you're going to be at the Hard Rock Friday night.
Me and Rodrigo are going to be on the way after everybody leaves.
No, we get the heavyweights up there. So
you'll be continued.
Yeah. How many fights are in that card?
Pay-per-view, there's going to be 4. But total card, there's 8. We start at 3 o'clock. So,
3 o'clock is the first fight?
Yeah. But they have one. You take a little break. Like, usually that time, the only people there are me.
That's how people get so drunk. They stay for the whole thing. Just drink in between everything.
It's crazy, though. Crazy. I wish you could actually go to the fight because I know you're in Laughlin that night. But Friday for the weigh-in is really cool. It's first come, first serve at the MGM in the Grand Arena. And the Raza shows up early because they
line first up. Come, first serve? So there's no like
for the weigh-in.
Oh, for
the weigh-in.
The weigh-in is big. It's getting bigger and bigger every year.
It's crazy. Yeah. It used to be
people
just
party for that.
Because these people have nothing else to do.
Hey. Are there bets placed on the weigh-in?
In the crowd.
No official bets.
There's also bets being made side if the guy touches the other guy's shoulder.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There's always really? Like, is he going to do that? Yeah. I've heard people in the crowd because you have nothing to do there. So, like, you could get really close. And so people line up early and there's beer. This is Vegas. Beer being sold all day long. So you get there, and it's a party. There's mariachis going, so it's really festive. But if you guys come with me, it would be cool and hanging out in the back, and you can see what's going on. And then as soon as they get off the scale, I'll interview. I think Gennady, I get him. I get the B-side. So I'll be on the scale, interview him, and then everybody will be booing and people going on.
After the scale, what is the weight for Triple G?
They're fine at 160.
160, that's pretty good.
So they have to be at 160. If they go over, they have to – they give 2 hours to lose whatever it is they have to lose.
2 hours?
Usually it's like – if they go over – but this is – no, it's usually a couple ounces.
Yeah, crazy.
Oh, really?
After they
– they're already sucked up dry as it is.
After the 160, that night they probably eat a lot, huh? Do they weigh you again at the fight?
For this one, I don't think so. For some sanctioning belts, they'll have it where you can only weigh no more than 10 pounds. But for this one, it's fine. But these guys, they don't want to go too heavy. They usually weigh about 172 to 175.
At the fight?
Yeah, at the fight. What they do is they'll go, they'll rehydrate. You'll see a lot of electrolyte. You know, people call it Pedialyte, but it's if you're like Canelo will have the electrolyte.
Sweat.
The real one, the one from Mexico. That electrolyte, electrolyte. So that'll be legit. And then
they come with leeches.
Yeah, they hit that right away. Then they go have like a pasta dinner. Like they don't go and like get McDonald's or anything like that. They have like nutritionists that give them the proper
thing. Carbo load.
Yeah. Like
before, back in the late 80s, remember that boxer, Boom Boom Mancini?
Yeah, Mensa member.
Philadelphia. That fool barely made the way and brought in for one of his five, I think with a middleweight fight, a welterweight fight. And he was so happy because that fool was starving. As soon as he got off the thing, that fool started eating a big old Philadelphia cheesesteak, bro.
Damn.
Yeah, which is the worst thing to do. Yeah, but if you lose.
He lost that fight, by the way.
Yeah.
But you should have saw his little fat ass, bro. Yeah. He was going, eating all fat.
Yeah, like with technology now, nutritionists and diets, they do it a better way than the way in the past. Before, it used to be, let's not eat for the week and then go stand in the sun and lose the weight and like don't drink any water.
I knew wrestlers who would spit in the trash can in high school to make weight. Yeah. Spit.
They still
like
do
that's
that.
Enough.
Because
to change their weight.
You'll see before the weigh-in, guys are always chewing gum because they're going to spit. They spit a lot because these guys have like probably 5% body fat at this point, and
it's all water weight then, all the water rest weight. Of it.
So Damn. So and if you miss weight, you have to pay usually 20% to the commission.
Damn.
And then and there's sometimes
no joke.
Yeah, it's no joke, and you know you're making a million, you got to pay 200.
How much spit does Rodrigo have to throw out to lose some weight?
Rodrigo can make heavyweight because there's no limit.
Heavyweight?
No limit. Really?
There's limit for heavyweights.
Damn.
Yeah. So
Holyfield was 235, huh?
He actually used to fight smaller than that. Wow. He used to fight like a 215, 220, but he was all jacked up, rocked up.
So you could have a huge disparity within a heavyweight championship.
Yeah, well, remember Butterbean? The big guy was like almost 400 pounds.
He Buster Duggan?
Butterbean.
Buster Bug.
And he could fight a 250 guy.
Yeah,
whatever.
As long as once you're a heavyweight, it doesn't matter. It's a smaller division.
What's the lowest flyweight?
Most guys, they're 106.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's like a jockey.
Yeah.
Flyweight, man.
Like 105, usually those are the TIE fighters.
A lot of guys from Oaxaca and the Philippines and Vietnam.
Yeah, those guys.
I haven't seen 105 since 7th grade.
Yeah, and you see, like, the smallest I've worked usually is, like, 112, and then there's a couple 115s. But most of the guys are, like, between 126 to 140. Those are.
I remember in a cartoon they have pen weight.
Pen weight?
Paperclip weight.
No. Paperclip?
In the cartoons.
I never saw that. All right, let's.
Yeah, it'll be good though. You should go if you go. Be behind the stage.
Who do you got, dog?
It's
tough, man.
It's tough. Like the 24/7 debut on HBO. They don't like each other.
Can tacos really affect with steroids?
In Mexico, the clenbuterol, it's contaminated.
Really?
So Canelo,
is that what really happened to him?
The story goes according to Canelo that he doesn't know what he ate. That he had some meat.
And with all these high-tech nutritionists getting paid.
But think about it. If you go to a restaurant.
Street tacos.
Like, okay, if you're at home and you go and you bring your own food, then you're like, you know where you're getting it from, right? If you're getting the grass-fed, if you're going to Whole Foods, then you trust that. But if you're going to a restaurant, you don't know which cow came from there, right? So, like, could he have done it? Possibly. Could he be clean? Possibly.
Right.
But
so it has a little asterisk there, though.
That's what Gennady Golovkin's going off about, how, you know, he failed the test twice and it was in his system. So it's a lot of back and forth. They don't like each other. That's the good thing.
Who?
Gennady and Triple G and Canelo. They don't like each other. So that's why it's going to be good. And then the thing is, Canelo has a lot of haters that are Mexicans.
Yeah, they love that Triple G.
But here's the thing, though. I figured it out. The Mexican fans that hate Canelo are just usually those Mexicans that just hate everything just to hate.
You know? The hater Mexicans.
Like, let me go against this guy.
No matter what.
Don't say nothing about Alex DeLarge, bro.
Oh, he's undefeated? Whatever. He hasn't fought anybody. Like, those kind of guys. You know that. Like, he's not funny. Oh,
yeah. Just to be a dick.
Yeah, or just to go contrarian. Those kind of guys.
Yeah, those kind.
But those guys react to other stuff, bro.
Oh, yeah. They'll react no matter what. Like, there's like the Mexicans for Golovkin shirts. Like, a friend of mine, Sal, made the shirts, Mexicans for Golovkin. Fool, you were just making it just to sell it. And of a sudden, his shirts got bootlegged by a legit store in Vegas that they took his shirt, took his design. Dude. I'm like, what's making swap me shirts?
What's up, fool? And man, I forgot to mention, man, I'm going to be at the East LA Parade this year. Yeah, man, I'm going to be the Grand Marshal.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am, bro.
No, not Grand. I don't know if you're a Grand Marshal, but an honoree. You're an honoree.
I ain't going there.
That's the attitude, right?
That's Sunday, September 16th.
I even got to borrow a car, dog.
Well, somebody from, I think, J&R Upholstery, that guy that you went to Skid Row with, the Lowriders, who passed out gifts and stuff on Skid Row. One of those guys is going to drive you.
They slipped the rug out of me right now.
So Mexican Independence Day, you get to be
the fast one.
Grand Marshal.
He's an honoree. He was supposed to be Grand Marshal, but I don't know how. I think it was a timing thing.
Come on.
Yeah.
Who's bigger than you right now?
Danny Trejo, maybe?
Same fools that used to hate De La Hoya because he wasn't a real Mexican.
Yep. Because he's all good looking, had all the women.
I'm not the Grand Marshal, Kula Kula Khan. What does that rat squeak squeak mean anyways? Anyways. What's up, fool?
I don't know.
What happened to Ben Affleck this week, bro? You see him crying?
This is a fall off the wagon, right?
Yeah, but it's bad. Lisa was there.
What?
I wasn't there. But, you
know, hook up with a nanny or something?
Well, that was a year and a half ago or
hit
so.
Hit Rios.
He's back.
But no,
What's up, fool?
He was dating this woman who was a producer from SNL for the last year. Uh-huh. And then
the producer of SNL.
Yeah, she's a producer. And then she broke it off with him because I think he was already going down that spiral. Right? He was starting to drink again, and it was affecting their relationship. Then, after she breaks up with him, like immediately, he goes out with some Playboy model, right? But this isn't like, I think she...
They're just friends.
I think she saw stars in her eyes, like... I think she saw stars in her eyes, like, I'm going to be the new chick on the side, you know, on his arm.
Dog.
You're upgrading dog.
Always, bro.
I think she thought she was going to be the chick on the side. Not on the side, but the new one.
She was upgrading.
Yeah. So, I like that. But she was just like, it was just like one of those Leaving Las Vegas situations where she was just hanging out, drinking with him for a few days.
Enabling.
He was on a binge.
On a bender.
Bro, he was one of those binges, bro, like where you're happy, dog.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, they have a photo of him at Jack in the Box with her, going, like, smiling, ordering. He's all, you could see he's ready to go get loaded after this.
Yeah, the little saliva that only addicts get on the side.
Yeah.
He's like, ready for the little fucking popping jalapenos.
He has a bad puffiness.
You know when you've been in a good one, when you've been up for 3 days, you get your puffing from right here.
Yeah.
And you're like this. You're alert.
He's on this temporary high where you could tell he's going to crash.
And he's in a good one, bro. He's a beautiful girl.
Yeah.
She's 22. She doesn't know who what Ben Affleck is going through.
She doesn't know his capabilities.
So she's just partying with him.
She's just happy to be with a celebrity.
Yeah. Living her best life.
Yeah.
She thought she was going to be in the Hunger Games, bro.
Yeah. Something.
Like Goodwill Hunting.
But yeah, so then the next. So then that's like 3 or 4 days of that.
I've been coked out and I've been an addict and I've been that messed up that I'm pretty sure what he was telling her, bro. I think you could be good bad girl.
Bad girl?
For reals, man.
You're probably lying all
you
these
lies. You could be a star.
But yeah, so the last thing is, so after 3 or 4 days of them partying together and her staying at his house.
GMC got him at different spots too,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm, different
wearing
spots.
Wearing the same clothes.
Yeah, because they were
at a leather jacket, like, brown one. Like,
the first night they went out, they went to Nobu or something like that.
They're nice.
The second one was Jack in the Box. So, you know, they
got
just.
That boiler room money.
Yeah, so anyway. The third or fourth day, Jennifer Garner. You want to meet Matt Damon? That's
a good one, man. I don't know that guy who right there, Hector Munoz. Oh. They caught that fool partying at the Raiders Stadium before it was built.
That's funny.
So what did Jenny Garner say?
So Jennifer Garner was caught like 4 days after his binge started. She's at the house and she's caught walking out like freaking out and like shaking and crying, right? Because she saw him in there, I guess. And she comes back like half an hour later with some other woman and they take him. And the TMZ's all over them the whole time. So as they take him, Jennifer's got sunglasses on the front. This woman's sitting next to her in the front. They stop at Jack in the Box again.
Yeah.
In the daytime.
He's not happy, bro.
Yeah, he's not happy.
Tacos are good.
He's not happy this time.
Number seven.
I think this is just throwing food down his throat before they take him to rehab. Because they were on the way to rehab. She's taking him to rehab. Bro, his ex-wife.
You should see the everybody who's listening right now live, look up Ben Affleck, Jack in the Box, second time there.
That fool needs to call Jason
but
Bourne.
But he's
huh?
in the back, and crying. He is sweating and bro. Crying, and his face is puffy.
He's
like,
he's sweating it out.
He's like, where's my chair?
Yeah, like he is like a mess.
Get
in
it
the back.
Together, Ben.
So she must have walked in on that.
Down.
But Garner's who he has a child with, right?
Three children.
Oh, wow.
Three child.
All in, all under three 12 child. Years old. Oh. And so she's sitting there like this at the drive-thru.
Yeah, like what? I've been through this shit before.
Like
you know,
I'm, yeah.
You know, like usually when you have somebody who's been there, a codependent, who's seen you go through in and out. And
she's done.
She's like.
She's done at this point. I mean,
she's pretty much helping you take you to rehab, and that's it.
She just cares enough for you so you don't die so she doesn't have to explain it to the kids. You know what Jeez. I mean? Like that's. But she cares that's enough nice. About you through the kids that she's helping you out. But it is so sad. You could see it. Like she's just done in her face.
You need some tiger blood, man.
Dougie points. Ben Affleck trying
to. Ben Affleck was trying to get Dougie points, dog. It's
so anyway,
one,
yeah, Alex. It was. It's a mess, man.
Funny shit made me laugh.
It was a mess.
Today the listeners are funnier, man. What's up with that?
First day
you have good listeners, man.
But you understand, man, like, you don't know, man, like, if you've been there, when you're coming down, it's the worst. Because at first, you're all happy, bro. You're with your homies, your friends. But then everybody has to go to their regular lives, bro, eventually.
Only some fools.
So you're left with nobody, right?
They got to walk the dogs, bro. They got to go take the babies to school. People, and then little by little, people get locked, or people around you start getting locked up. They go shoplift or whatever.
Oh, whatever. They go shoplift.
When you're alone at the end, that's what Ben Affleck was going through. He knows that there's gonna, once he gets that hamburger, it's gonna be at the end of the rainbow, bro. He's going back to darkness.
Yeah.
And darkness, my old friend.
Yeah, and those people who are partying with him have no idea this is his. Another level of partying that they're not. It's not partying.
They're one of his friends. They're just people partying. Yeah. Taking his money and go with it.
This is the people he used to hang out.
That's the addict, bro. I'm going to tell you right now.
Let's go buy a motorcycle. Bro.
Ben Affleck.
Let's sell your motorcycle.
Ben Affleck, if he's not ready to recover, which I'm pretty sure he probably is not ready, the first thing that is going to happen through his head when he's sober up on his second day, when his second day sober, that's when you start thinking about, should I go back to partying? I beat this. You know, I'm not crying no more.
The second day?
Yeah, but it's still in your brain, though. You don't realize it. You think you're just fresh.
Oh, bro. All that ugliness is still inside you,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, it's still there.
Coke, PCP, whatever, it's in you. But see.
Your brain is still looking for it.
This was my problem. Like, even though I cried like that at Jack in the Box, bro.
Because nobody goes there sober.
I know. So after I'm sobering up and I'm hearing, like, other addict stories, I'm thinking, just with a crackhead, I've been doing crack 15 years. I've only been doing crack 3 years, right? I'm thinking, oh man, that guy smoked crack better than me. Maybe I was doing it wrong this time.
And what you were thinking also is
maybe I should go back and do it right this time.
Right?
You know? It was stupid. You know how much crack I wasted? I should go back. And in 3 days,
I burned it.
I'm back doing it exactly the way this addict told me. I got this time. I got a metal hanger to push my
Brillo pad,
and I was doing it better. And it's like every time I stopped, I learned how to be a better drug addict.
Wait, when you go to rehab, you learn to be a better one.
Yeah, if you talk
about techniques in rehab, bro, don't you know?
When
it's like trade school,
when you're
like UCLA Extension, they're helping you out a little bit,
bro. When you're hearing stories about addicts, especially the older ones, they tell you like, oh, nah, homie, you're wasting the crack. You gotta push it and then do the other side. I don't know. After my pipe was too stuffed up, I threw it away, bro. You're wasting it, homie. Man. So that's what you go through, you know, like when you start sobering up.
You also said
you gotta fight through it.
You also said that Ben was probably thinking the whole time, damn, I didn't really go out with a bang.
Yes.
Like I didn't have a big enough oomph before I have to go to rehab.
Like
a
war.
That's the worst. Crisis, dog.
That's what happens when you have take someone into a rehab sober.
Yeah.
Like he'll be like, oh,
like
man,
they didn't get a chance to get all of it out of their system.
I wanted to go out there and try to kill myself again.
But they don't think that.
I know to you it sounds strange, bro, but I'm telling you, man.
And they don't think they want to kill themselves.
When you're an addict, I don't care if you're gambling for bingo. Or your addiction is horse racing. You want to go out,
whatever
bro.
You want. You're
you
want to
leave
get
it. Leave it all out there.
You want to go out with a ha ha.
That's what
and then
man.
Stop, bro. You're not counting.
You want to be empty.
People think that people we think in our head addiction is like sports, bro. Where we gotta go out with 10 home runs.
Yeah. It's physical. It's emotional. It's psychological.
Damn. One, we have to bring our guests.
Yeah,
bro.
Let's wrap up with Beto and
Beto Duran, bro. What's your email?
My email is
not email. Your social media.
What's your phone number?
What's your handle?
867-537.
Don't go through a midlife.
Twitter is Duran Sports. Instagram Beto Vision. Living the Dream podcast, which you've been on, and the reason I started is because Lisa told me how to do it. So thank you guys so much. For doing it, and I keep doing it, and then the Yeah Man podcast.
Yep, you have your own little tribe and your own fan base.
I have my own
little
fan base.
Cool.
It's so much that I've expanded, and I went on Martin Moreno's.
Nice.
Yeah. And
you don't know what
you are. I am not ready. I am not ready.
You know how? You know how you have? I know. I go to your page and I listen to your Twitters. I know. This is how you know you have fans is when your fans get off you and fight each other.
Yeah.
I'll fight with someone, man.
Freaking Dodger fans.
or they want to like design your show for you, tell you what to do, or who you should
have
on.
What you should do, Beto.
Oh, my goodness.
Tell me one more time.
Why are you posting this? Because it's me.
Like, it's or, my
or there's people that you want to have on, but you feel like, no, you know what? This fool never cool with me. I'm going to wait for him to ask me to be on. But you know what? Or you get one of his friends, like, hey, when are you going to have what, what's his name?
Uh-huh. Oh, my goodness.
Next week, though.
This you know is the who world of podcasts.
Your show? You know who helped? Who does all that? Comedians I've never heard of. Ooh. Like, I went on Martin's, and all of a sudden, hey, let me be on yours. Hey, let me be on. I'm like, where are you performing at? Like,
10 followers.
I'm not even the followers. I don't know you. Like, if Felipe don't follow you, then you're not nobody. I'm not worried about
it. Hey, bro, this fool did it. Marco Ramos said Lamar Odom did it the right way. He almost died on the last dish.
At the Bunny Ranch in Vegas.
He went to the Bunny Ranch and almost died.
Yeah. And that's he had a bunch of people there.
Yeah, he did almost die, huh? He almost had a stroke or something.
He was in the hospital.
Ah. He did. He took Viagra and a sleeping pill.
That's right.
Yeah. He woke up to a horseshoe tournament.
Cleaned up, and he's playing basketball in China now.
What's up, boo?
All right, thank you, guys. See you in Vegas.
All right,
man.
Stick around,
Doc,
if you want to leave or stay.
All right, Doc.
All right, Doc.
Yeah, man.
All right, you guys ready? So what we got on next? Oh, you want to do these little the tour dates and stuff while they're getting seated?
All right, people, I got my glasses on, so don't get scared. Upcoming shows, I'm going to the Brea. I'm going to Brea Improv. Okay, other shows are sold out except no, they're all sold out because you're listening on Friday. But if you're watching on YouTube, we have tickets left for Thursday, and we added a second show, 9:30 Sunday. See you there.
I think there's only like – I think there are maybe only 20 tickets for Thursday.
Okay, only 20 tickets.
So you got to hurry.
August 30th, September 2nd, Labor Day weekend at the Brea Improv, sold out except Sunday at 9:30. Atlantic City, New Jersey, September 7th at the Borgata. Borgata. Washington, D.C., September 8th at the National Harbor Casino. Las Vegas, September 14th. Laughlin, Nevada, September 15th. Lexington, Kentucky, September 20th or 22. We're bringing Martin Rizzo to this show. So check it out. Springfield, Massachusetts, September 9th. Check out FelipeWorld.com/tour for all the upcoming shows and secret information. Rodrigo Torres has the Young Man podcast. That's still going strong. Go check out the Yo podcast with Martin Moreno. George Perez stories with George Perez and Side Dick Eddie and the other homie. Go check out the Toby Hicks and Jamal Dolman podcast, the Dope Dealer podcast. Also, go check out the other our sister podcast, the Drama Club podcast. Mm-hmm. And, we just became co-producers of Ralphie Mays
Associate producers.
Unbelievable.
Of the new special.
So we're going to get a screener's copy of one of Ralphie Mays' never-before-released HBO specials.
No, his first album he ever recorded. Yeah, it's never been released.
So, I'm taking two good jokes out of it. I paid for it.
$2,500.
What's up, fool? Okay, man, we have a... Okay, first of all, before we get to them, I'll talk about how I know the movie, bro. You know me, bro. I watch a lot of YouTube video. I read that a bunch of books. You know, we read those books about that guy boxer.
Enriquez?
Yeah, we read the other book about the Mexican mafia. The guy wrote Rafael, the lawyer.
Tony Rafael.
And, of course, we saw American Me and Blood In, Blood Out. And we have Miklo on the show. We have Gilbert Carrillo, the guy who got the Night Stalker. But, bro, I'm telling you, man, when I used to watch YouTube, there was this guy on the show who was talking. His name was Kilroy. And he was talking, bro, and like he was like an old gentleman and very, very, very well with words, bro. And he was talking about, changing your life and all that stuff. And then I found him through a gang video that was posted and stuff up. And then Well, you know, bro, I got all into it, bro, his story. And I always wanted him to have a podcast. And then we talked to Mark. Remember Mark? Mark from White Fence.
Yeah, man.
A recovering addict, too.
Was it Kilroy from White Fence, too?
23 years.
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, 23 years sober, bro. And, but, you know, I'm always into like, everything, bro. You know me, bro. And you too, you love every type of, we like the subculture, bro.
The underworld.
The underworld, bro. We like to hear stories from real people, bro. That were unsung hero raza.
Primary sources, doctor.
So there's a movie coming out about Kilroy. His real name is let me try to find out. I got my glasses. Maybe you can help me out with Ernest Kilroy Roybal, bro. Not to be mistaken with that politician Roybal.
Well, it's a political family, the Roybals here in L.A. Is he related to him by any chance?
I don't think so.
No, okay.
That I know of.
Yeah, that name's pretty rare too.
Mm-hmm. So they made a movie about Kilroy's life. Is the movie done?
Yeah, we filmed it.
This is Paul.
Yeah, I'm Paul. I'm the executive producer.
Paul Morales, he's a filmmaker, interventionalist. Paul is a graduate from Community Gang Intervention from Project Kinship Sister Organization to Humble Industry. Help. We have something in common now.
I know.
Humble Industry helped me out before when it was Jobs for the Future. And you, I've seen you in movies,
yeah.
And I've been following you on Instagram for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
We had two guys on our show that know you too. They were on that video, Cholos Eat Sushi.
Cholos Try.
What was his name?
Well, Carlos Ayala.
Carlos and Fabian. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're good people.
Mm-hmm. So you guys get started in the movie. What made you start the movie? Why?
Well, you know, growing up.
Where'd you grow up, by the way? Sorry, Paul.
I grew up in La Habra, West Side La Habra.
We had a guy from Harbor City here.
Different area.
Hawthorne. Harbor City?
Yeah, that's over there by Martin, no?
Yeah.
Where's La Habra? No? Oh, I know where La Habra is.
Right next to Whittier.
I know where La Habra is. That's Orange County.
Yeah.
Right by Brea, bro.
Bro, the first. Let me tell you how I know La Habra.
There you go.
La Habra opened up Krispy Kremes, bro.
Yes.
And let me tell you, man, I was sober. When you're sober, you pick up other stuff to do besides putting drugs in your body. So my friend said, "Hey Felipe, you want to go drive 40 minutes to eat some good stuff?" I said, "Bro, you know me, I'm not gonna do no drugs. No, we're talking donuts." So I drove 45 minutes and I waited in line for an hour for donuts there.
I remember those days, man.
We're probably all there at the same time.
But there's a Krispy Kreme everywhere.
Hell yeah!
But that was like the only one.
Yeah. Now it closed down, man. Too many of them. The original closed down.
That's sad. Well, it started to disrupt you with food again.
I love it. Yeah, so we started this movie. I've been to the joint, grew up a rough life, grew up a gang member, a shot caller. So Kilroy was one of those guys that was always, he's one of the co-founders of the Mexican Mafia. You know, he was there from the beginning. So he was there with Weto Buff. He was there from the start. So As a gang member in prison, he was always one of my, even though I didn't know him, he was one of my shot callers, you know, one of the people who was over us, you know, and he was a big name. There's not really many names bigger than his, you know, in the system. You know, you have these guys, Joe Morgan and all them, but Kilroy was one of the biggest. So being as that, getting out, changing my life, you know, through many things, going to school, me and Kilroy became good friends. And this story just had to be told, you know. Growing up here in White Fence, 40 years in prison, murder, you know, just
everything. I read that he was born in 1939.
Yes.
And he did 40 years. He came out in 1994. What was the interview for that made him do so much time?
He got busted for all kinds of stuff, but ultimately in the middle of that, he got caught for a murder, you know. Obviously, we don't
inside?
Know how many. Yeah, inside. Inside Chino, he got caught for a murder and... you know, he did a lot of time through, this is his words, through writs, appeals, and the grace of God, he got out.
Hmm.
And now his mission is to reach gang members. You could find him here in White Fence. You could find him everywhere. Boyle Heights is his heart, you know, reaching people, you know.
So when he was locked up in there, I know when I was watching his video, he was talking about how he has relatives. That I thought they grew up and he spoke to them, you know, don't be so hard. And now they're living in a shoe for like 18 years straight.
Yeah, man. He was there.
Security housing unit, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was there, man. He was there locked down.
You've been in a shoe?
You know, I've been in the hole. I've been in the hole for a long time.
What's the longest you've been in the hole?
Probably 6 months.
But is that legal?
It was at the time.
Just have someone.
It was at the time.
You're in total darkness, or was there
no?
You a bed in the bathroom?
Yeah, pretty much.
No books, nothing?
No, you got books. You get books. You get books, and even like when I was at Tracy Prison, which is Gladiator School where the Mexican Mafia started, after 10 days they give you a TV when I was there. Now, in Kilroy's day, that's different, you know. Kilroy grew up in a harder time, you know. I think it was more of what you would picture, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That's not the first time I heard that about Tracy being the Gladiator School, because that's the prison they send you right after YA, right?
Yeah, I went there at 18, 19 years old, grew up, and I remember saying, oh, man, you know, you always hear in the county jail, it's going to be on with the Norteños, you know. So I'm waiting to see what's a Norteño, what's he look like, you know, when we get there, and they had the tails and the long hair, right? So we get there, and, you know, it is what it is. It had calmed down a little by the time I got there, but it was still jumping off a little, you know.
I remember, man, when I was, I stopped kind of like doing drugs like in the 1992, because I grew up in Boyle Heights right there in the Pico Aliso housing projects. And when I was in rehab and when I came out, I was working with an old man and he was from Maravilla. And he didn't know what's going on. He hadn't been in the game for a long time. And he went inside for a warrant. And when he got out, he was, what happened? He goes, oh, man, I don't know what happened, but I had like 10 little homies and an old homie trying to stab me in there. He goes, what do you think is going on? He goes, I don't know. He goes, I found out there's a green light and my homies.
Yeah.
He goes, I'm out of the game, though.
Oh, from Maravilla.
He's from Maravilla.
Yeah. When I was there, and the last time I was there in Chino, too, there was guys in there who were from Maravilla, Christians, whatever. You know, they were doing good. You know, they were real, you know, they're fake Christians in there. They're real ones, too.
For real?
Yeah, but even they threw them out. You know, they had to get off the yard, you know, and it was crazy, you know.
When I was in rehab, at Live Again Recovery Homes. If anybody looking for a rehab, it's Live Again Recovery Home with Pastor Juan. And look him up. I was there, and it started off like a 6 month program. We were six of us, and we were living in the valley. But then we grew. We took in a lot of people from Fresno and Madera, and then we moved to the Saugus. We had our own little camp, and then we lived a lot of. I got my hair cut, dude, from an old dude. He cut my hair with razor blades. I don't know, you might know him. His name is Sonny Ballesteros. He was an old man. He said he won the middleweight champion in Folsom.
Probably, man. Probably. That was Kilroy's thing, too.
Sonny Ballesteros?
Yeah.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, he's an old man. He's a barber and a boxer. He had his hair. He had better hair than us.
Where's he from?
I don't know, man.
No.
I think he was probably by your area, maybe. But he had he was an old man. When I was in rehab, he was already 50, 60.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, he had like hair, white hair all the way to the back, smooth, and a nice little old mustache. And he did the boxing matches.
You cut your hair with a razor, huh?
Yeah, with a razor.
Many of those, man.
And then there was another guy. His name was Chuy. He was from Clanton.
Uh-huh.
Chuy Jesus Quintana, and that guy, man, we were in rehab. Man, what a sad dude, man. He said he was locked up. The first time he did was 8 years. Nine straight. Got out. He owed somebody a favor. Went back in to do another eight, bro.
Man.
And then, like, the routine, you know. Mm-hmm. He's like heroin.
Yeah. That's what I'm hoping. That's what I'm hoping with
drug
this movie.
Choice.
Huh?
What was your drug choice?
I wasn't really a druggie, man. I was more of a gangster. But to be honest with you, it wasn't, you know, I would drink beer, but I was violent, you know. I was violent. You know, I didn't have a drug of choice, you know, maybe a cheeseburger. No. But, nah.
What were you into? You were a drug dealer or what?
No, I was just a gangster, man.
Yeah, just like shooting?
I was a gangster, yeah. I was a gangster. And then eventually, you know, I went to the county. And then I was in the tank. And somebody told me this guy has to be taken out. And, you know, I didn't stab him. You know, we didn't have a knife. But beat him up and ended up being one of the shot callers that whoever fell out of favor. And that gave me status. From there, it grew and grew and grew until, you know.
What's the joint? My microphone went off.
Yo.
Yo.
Check, check.
Can you hear us?
Check.
It wasn't a wiring touch?
Yeah, maybe you kicked something on your foot, on your knee.
I'm good.
Somebody got too much bass in their voice.
Can you hear me?
space. How low can you go?
Just gonna look at the connections.
The stream sounds fine, so it's just your headphones.
Oh, it's just the headphone?
What happened?
Yeah, we can keep going. Headphones. It's just the headphones.
Okay, it's the recording. Okay, what's up, fool? Okay, thank you, Alex. They say it sounds good.
There we go.
You were born in New Jersey?
Yeah.
How'd you make it out to L.A.?
It's a long story, but to shorten it up, my dad was a journeyman operator for a glass company. Glass company started closing because of aluminum and plastic. And we first moved to Texas, then to Pennsylvania. Graduated Pennsylvania where Mike Piazza played ball there in high school in Phoenixville. And then I came out here when I was 20. And I got into gangs. And
so you're Mexican or Puerto Rican?
No, I'm Mexican. I was the only Mexican in a Puerto Rican town in Dover. Yeah. Yep.
When did you get into acting?
I was doing drugs and doing all kinds of bad things. I was in music for a long time.
You were a rapper at one time.
Yeah. And I got clean. I still wanted to do some type of entertainment. Got involved with Sons of Anarchy. My friends had a car club with Techniques in Baldwin Park. And got on there and then started taking classes because I wanted to expand instead of just doing background work. So, yeah, it was 2011. And I've been doing some things after that. Got on Shameless and so I've been doing some good things.
Real cool.
Kilroy, first lead. So,
how'd you get to the film industry?
As far as what?
How'd you get started? What was your first documentary?
First documentary, I think, was I've done a lot of little films, but then I did a documentary on Kilroy. I did a documentary, that's done, you know, whatever. And that could be gotten through Homies Through Christ, directly through Kilroy. I've done casting with Justin Chan of the Twilight series for the movie Gook. I went to Sundance. I helped do the casting there. I got the Latino actors, and that's a whole other story. You know, and just always been, I was never in the cliquish media crowd.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've always been kind of like into it, you know. And this movie, what we hope to do with Kilroy is going to be the most, you know, like a lot of the movies you say, Blood In, Blood Out, American Me, they're not like based on reality. Like they have the mafia starting like later. They're starting it like they have the wrong guy starting it for the first place. So, but where ours is going to be like the most, probably the most accurate movie that's ever been done on the story, you know, on the movie. We try to keep as accurate as possible with myself. And then my co-executive producer's like, he's like an expert on the subject also. So we're not trying to disrespect no one, but we are trying to tell a story of hope. We're getting to the ugliness. We're trying Kilroy's telling Kilroy's story the way it was, the ugliness. And when he became a Christian, we're showing that too. We're not cutting out nothing. We're going to be real and
faith-based. Man.
Yeah, and some political correctness. People might not like it, but we'll show the bad and the Christian stuff.
Duke of Earl kind of had a little Christian twist to it.
I love Duke of Earl.
Duke
of Earl. He died at the end.
Remember that?
And that was the whole thing to try to get up out of that life.
That's the reason I'm with a white girl right now, because of all the homies.
They show the change, you know, from the darkness to the light. And that's the only reason why I did it.
If Trello can have a white chick, I can have a white chick.
Yeah. That's right.
And how did you guys link up?
We've always been seeing each other, actually, like some family groups and church and stuff, meeting together as filmmakers and actors and stuff. And then there was another film that I saw him do, and, you know, just bumping into each other here and there. And he hit me up one day and wanted to do Kilroy and was, you know, offered me an audition for that.
Yeah, the first time we met, we were at a thing with Michael Pena.
Oh, yeah, at that function in L.A. It was just right there, like a rampart.
That guy looks like Kilroy. You know, we didn't know each other yet.
Wilson.
But that guy looks like Kilroy.
Yeah.
And then who would have known years later, I Papa Pilo's pizza in Anaheim, best pizza around. I did a casting.
Shout out.
Yeah. I did a casting, and he was the first one we auditioned, and he killed it. And from there on, I had to tell a lot of Wilson's friends who were hoping for the part, too, that Achale, you know, the first guy got it. Wilson killed it, and he was a guy. And I'm so glad because integrity, honesty, and he memorized the whole script. He came to set, memorized the whole script. He didn't even have to give a paper, bro. So that's a pro.
Yeah.
Did you do it?
You. Did you do anything extra to prepare for the film, like background? Or
well, I talked to Kilroy, and I did research.
The way he walked, you got his mannerisms and all that?
Yeah, I did a little bit. I didn't do too much.
You had a little bit of your own Wilson's?
Of course. Of course
I did. Zazz to it?
Yeah, because, I mean, I've been around, and I've seen some things, and I grew up in but I hung out in Boyle Heights in the Ramona Garden Project, so we're very close to each other. So definitely I used what I knew, my unique technique, as my coach tells me, and yeah, put it together, try to put away the accent I have, a little East Coast accent I have, try to keep it more subtle, but that's it. Yeah,
somebody said the Chuck Wilson, the prime suspect, said what's up.
Oh, the prime suspect said what's up. That's the old suspects. We was in a group called the Suspect Nation, so
that's tight.
Shout out to the suspects.
Right. There you go, bro. Now you know his rap name, because the guy over there, Alex Castaneda, he wanted to know what your rap name, and then the prime suspect got on.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, I used to be called Lefty.
Lefty, bro. You got it?
Yeah, no more Lefty, though.
How long?
Righty.
How long did this film take to film?
We did it in about a month and a half.
Whoa.
About a month and a half.
12-hour days?
Yeah, we did, but we did weekends, because we had a huge cast of, like, I mean, for us, for an independent film, like 70 people. I mean, you have 70 inmates that's coming like in one day.
Wow.
You know, you need to get everybody there. You know, not everybody could be there on a Monday or a Tuesday. And a lot of the people, like, we're all friends. Like, everybody, you know, the community. Emilio, everybody knows each other, right?
Louis G.
So, exactly. He's the only one that wasn't in it, huh?
He would have been perfect. He's also a born-again Christian.
It would have been Hector.
Yeah.
Hector, man. Yeah.
So, Paul, did you run into, or do you think Tekashi you'll run into
what's up? Think one night.
Any problems, like, you know, like with that happened with Edward James Olmos and American Me?
No.
You know, stuff like that where these original members or these other members get mad at you talking about this.
You know, like when I talked to Kilroy, we did it specifically to reach kids, to reach youth, that the gang members, specifically in Boyle Heights and in my area where I grew up, that they would see that there's another way. No, I didn't grow up in Boyle. Kilroy. Yeah. So I haven't ran into nothing, and I think a lot of the stuff with Edward James Olmos could have been avoided because
I think it's
because
of the fictionalization.
Yeah, like they had Cheyenne getting killed by his own people. Mm-hmm. They had Cheyenne getting.
Yeah, you're right, because that didn't happen.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff didn't happen.
And I read that on the bio about Kilroy that whole thing could have been avoided, and because it happened that the whole beef started between North and South over shoes, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us that story.
It happened kind of before that. There was the Sureños, the guys from the South, always kind of looked down to the guys in the North. You know, it was always a thing. They didn't. I mean, not all of them.
Farmers, huh?
Not all of them. Not all of them.
Because they were paisas.
No, farmers. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I wouldn't know the word, but they kind of looked down on them. But don't get me wrong. There was guys. From up north, who were in the Emmett too, who were in the Mexican Mafia. But for the most part, they didn't like them. And eventually, you know, when you get bullied so much, they want to come back.
Yeah.
They want to come back. And so one day, one of the Sureños, one of the Emmett guys, was going, passing by a cell, seeing some shoes, took them. And they happened to be to a Nuestra Familia guy, you know, the Northern Mafia, took the shoes. Went and gave him. They didn't fit, so he gave him to some guy named Robot Salas, who everybody knows. Trejo knows this guy. He's dead now, but
Robot Salas
gave it to Robot. Mm-hmm. Gave him to Robot. Robot's in the yard, and then the Northern guy sees, hey, those are my shoes, and confronts him. And then those are my shoes. We're gonna get down later. And Robot just went back and got a knife and took care of it pretty quick. And that's kind of like how the North South. And then Kilroy, his part of that, they knew something was brewing, so they locked him down. They locked him down because, you know, he was one of the shot callers. So they locked him down before he could get involved, you know, stuff like that.
Shoe Wars.
The Shoe Wars, man, that's big. There's a book called The Shoe Wars.
The Shoe Wars?
The Shoe Wars by Mundo Mendoza.
Mundo Mendoza, you have him in the movie. He played by Big Dog Mario.
No, right? He's Mundy. He's Mundy. Mundy. Yeah.
We had Big Mario here on the show, too.
I seen it, man. I followed the podcast. He did good.
Okay. Shout out to Big Mario, Big Dog. He was a guest on the podcast. He's also in the movie.
Mariano.
Wow, man. That's crazy that over the shoes and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. And it went on, you know. And
then I read that that the original guy, one of the guys, he wanted to make a peace with North and South?
Well, that's Cheyenne. Oh,
yeah. Cheyenne.
Cheyenne's one of the original
two. Cardenas.
Cheyenne Cardenas. He wanted to make a peace treaty. We touched that. We touched the shoe war. We touch on that in the movie.
In the movie. That's very sensitive.
Yeah, we touch on that in the movie, and we show a conversation that Kilroy had with him that Kilroy didn't agree. He's like, "Bro, you're your own man, but go ahead. You know, go ahead. But I don't agree with it. Be careful." Yeah. You know.
Being that that's an actual history and event. Did you guys try to keep it exactly the way it happened?
You know,
or you
close.
Had a little Hollywood twist, you know, keep everybody happy.
No, it's close, but what it is, you know, he got thrown off the tier, you know.
Whoa.
He got stabbed in real life, he got thrown off the tier. So
by his own homeboys or other fools?
No, by the northern guys. His own cousin actually too.
Set him up, huh?
His own cousin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he went down there. His own cousin was one of the northern guys and threw him off the tier. We try to stay close, bro, but you know, what we do, like, there were so many prisons over so much time.
You guys shot actual in prisons?
No, we shot it at a movie studio.
Okay.
At, it's called, I forget, in Anaheim.
Silver Streams.
Silver Dream Factory.
Silver Dreams Factory.
So in other words, like, this happened in Folsom, this happened in Quinton, this happened in Tracy, this happened in Soledad. So because of that, it would be too confusing to show all these different things. So we just kind of kept it more in one, you know, one prison, so to speak. You know, almost. Not really, but, you know, to keep it as simple as possible. Mm-hmm. So at the starting of the movie, it's going to say, like, for the movie, you know, just that's the only thing you're going to see different. You know, because now we're at Folsom, now we're at Quinton, now we're at Tracy. It would be too much for a movie, you know.
Did you find it difficult to direct a movie? Because I know there's a lot of pressure on you for that movie.
Yeah, it was hard. There was a time we were filming Saturday.
Did you ever, like, bump heads with Wilson Alvarez acting skills?
No.
Maybe he would have do it this way?
No.
It's Ramirez, like Richard.
Yeah.
No, bro. Wilson's a pro, bro. Anybody out there needs the most professional actor I've ever worked with?
Thanks,
seriously,
man.
Is Wilson.
I got no money on me right now.
Nothing to say about other actors who go to 4 years and pick up a fine arts degree. Why is it that comedians and people with a rough background can act?
Because we've been lying the whole time. Been lying. Great actors, right? I just needed to get a little technique in, and that was it. Yeah, thank God.
If you want to join the Wilson Antonio Ramirez acting class.
Yeah. Just do some
dope. We're pretending.
Get loaded, and you'll be fine now. But yeah. I think the main thing for the movies that it's in all respect, and it's faith-based, and it's the only reason why, because I didn't want to offend, you know, anybody, you know, any of the big homies, and nothing like that. And I definitely wanted to keep it as true as possible, and that's what the directors did. And I was glad, you know, because I think it's a good movie, because like I said, it talks about light, the dark into the light, and it's a message. It's not just like, you know, the ugly, and that's it. He changed. And a lot of things could have happened to Kilroy, and things didn't. And I think it's because a higher power that I like to call God came in and eased things and, you know, made things great.
What happened to that dude? Did he end up debriefing or, like,
who's that? Nah.
Kilroy?
Mm-mm. No, he never debriefed.
Never debriefed.
That's one of them.
That's another reason why I like him.
He was on in 1994, right?
Yeah, 1994.
40 years of his life.
Yeah. Him, Big D.
How old was he?
Art Blahos, Bobby Bustillo.
63, right?
I want to say in his 50s. I want to say in his 50s.
Yeah, because he's like 70.
He's 80 now.
Almost 80, right?
Yeah, 80. He's
80. Well, it's like in Shawshank, when they say they're going to take your new life, that's what they do, is take your life.
Yeah.
When he came out a little angrier to society. Did you want to go back to his bad ways, or you were confused about going good or bad?
No, what happened there was inner fighting between the old guys and the young guys. You know, a lot of the younger guys were being... I mean, a lot of the older guys were being hit and stabbed, and Kilroy, you know, called out a few of them, and one of the younger guys stabbed him, and he ended up, you know, they ended up shipping to Pelican Bay. Once you're in Pelican Bay, you can't really get to people because you're locked down 23 hours a day, you know?
So when you Kilroy, been there?
No, I haven't been to Pelican Bay.
That's in over there by San Pedro under the port, right?
No, that's over by Oregon, the Oregon border.
Oh, Pelican Bay.
Pelican Bay, I'm sorry, what did I say?
I don't know.
But... anyway, so he got out, and he wanted to take care of business, to take some heads, and Kilroy was that type of person he didn't cross. But what happened one day, he was all strung out, and a little old lady came up to him and preached the gospel to him. And from that day forward, that changed his life, you know? Jesus changed his life. You know, that's all it was.
Mm-hmm. Now, being that way, you're not even supposed to get out of that life, right?
No.
So what happened with that? How was he able to transition?
He to him, it was blood in, blood out. And right? It's his words. I'm out because of the blood of Jesus Christ. So he says when you really serve God, that God's going to put a hedge of protection over you, you know, and protect him. So by that time, though, when he got saved, there was already another original member of the Mexican Mafia named Donald Garcia, Big D, who was saved. So Kilroy just followed into that. And now he has another guy, Purdy Bob. There's Art Blajos, Conejo from East L.A. There's all these guys that are out of the Mafia serving the Lord on the streets.
Art Blajos has a story like that, too. He had a story that they came up to him when he was preaching, and they told him, all right, but if you change, we're going to come back.
Yeah. All right, that's what it
and
was.
That's, you
so
know,
there's like a
but
level of respect
him,
because...
And to top it off, they didn't debrief. They never told. These guys never rolled on their friends because they felt that it wasn't their job to be a cop. Their job was to tell people about Jesus. Their job wasn't to tell what they did in the past or rat on their friends.
Right.
Now, you got other guys like Boxer Enriquez, Mundo Mendoza. They testified against the Mafia, put Joe Morgan away, Peg Leg. They put him away. But to them, but don't get me wrong, Mundo Mendoza, he testified whatever, but he was one of the biggest killers in the Mexican Mafia, man. He was a stone cold killer. Probably killed more than anybody except Robot. So he works with the feds now, but I mean, that guy's wrote a lot of books if you want to do a lot of history on
Mundo Mendoza.
And that was, again, to kind of save his life, right?
Yeah. But he also became a Christian. So he said God changed his life. I mean, I never met the guy, but I know friends who know him. And so supposedly he's the real deal. He's really walking with God. You know,
is that true that Joe Morgan needed to transfer him by helicopter because he was a risk? They're trying to kill him?
You know, I don't know about that, but I know they transferred for a trial. They transferred some of them called the Dumbo Drop.
I remember that.
Yeah, they took a couple of them. But I was in Corcoran. I was one of the shot callers. I was there when Joe Morgan died. You know, when Joe Morgan was in the hospital.
They brought cancer, him, right?
Yeah, the stomach cancer. They brought him down from Pelican Bay, and they brought him in an escort. That's why I bring it up. They brought him in an escort, and I was there when he died. And when he died, it was just like another day there. Like. You know.
Is he buried in Boyle Heights or buried in a prison yard?
You know, I don't know. I don't think he's in a prison yard. He had loved ones, bro.
Wasn't he? He's a Maravilla, right?
Yeah, I think he was from Maravilla, yeah.
He was like Latino and...
Or
and,
one of the flats, I forget.
Russian, right?
Yeah, something like that.
He's a full-on white boy, though, right? Wasn't he no Latino?
He was Yugoslavian or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
When did those shoe wars go down? What year was that?
Shoot, I want to say the mid-70s.
When was the Mexican Mafia started?
Probably the idea was in 1958. Idea.
Was that in
the
Folsom?
Idea? No, that was Tracy.
That
was in Tracy.
There's an old, I guess there's an old tattoo or an old, when you look up the Mexican Mafia, it's an old thing. And that thing has a cross on it.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
A lot of names and Kilroy's names. Those guys are the original guys.
Most of them.
Some of the neighborhoods, I don't think they exist. Like Vicky's Town.
There's one guy from Colton,
it's
too,
still,
right?
It's still, old school.
Yeah, Vicky's Town or... And
yeah, Fickett's still on there?
Yeah, Fickett's still there. Yeah. I actually know a guy from Fickett named Burunda. Have the last name, Burunda. He was a stoner and a cholo.
Yeah.
Right. And you guys are shopping this movie, not shopping, you guys are going to show this movie in churches first, right?
Well,
that's like the Tyler Perry way?
This is where we're at. We're with the distributors right now, right? The editing's just getting done, right? Mm-hmm. We got some killer guys from Long Beach, some black dudes doing it. They're awesome. They're going to finish it up. And then from there, we need to decide, like, you know, because we're not Stephen King. We don't have multi-million dollars. What's best for us to do a little, you know, some theaters or to go straight for digital? You know what I mean? Like, for us, financial-wise.
Throw it in film festivals, maybe?
Probably not.
No?
Probably not. Yeah, I think either way we get it from both sides, you know.
Is it going to be a movie or a documentary?
Movie.
It's a feature film.
It's going to be 2 hours. Yeah.
Nice.
And 2 hours, and then, you know, we think about it like this. Kilroy was involved in, from the start to now, the Mexican Mafia. So we couldn't cover all that time. And so, you know, Forrest Gump, he was here, there, different generations. That's how we're kind of doing the movie. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have a voiceover by a certain celebrity that I can't say right here.
Hell yeah.
That's going to do the voiceover that's going to carry it on from generation to generation.
Orale, what happened to Kilroy?
I was going to ask.
You're too good, bro.
Oh, man.
The story takes place in 1940. 49 in Boyle Heights.
What were the other things that kind of got Edward James almost in trouble?
Where they showed Cheyenne, one of the founders getting raped.
Yeah. And that other one that with happened, passing the drugs?
Also, or that baloney? Also, I think up until then, nobody knew that was happening. Maybe. I don't know.
Knew what was happening.
Well, there were certain things
the
like...
The drugs. Smuggling of drugs.
Yeah. The Italian mafia, it was never... It was always hush-hush.
So he
never
gave
happened.
Away too many secrets.
Yeah.
So there was actually an Italian mafia here at one time in L.A.?
There still is, man.
Well, the real, I know there was one...
The Milano family.
There was one... I know that there's... I read because... You guys remember, do you remember Chief Daryl Gates?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
LAPD?
Of course.
Well, I read his book for some reason. I read the whole book. And he said that there was a mob... But that mob here in L.A. was real small, but very strong. Like whenever a new mob guy moving from New York to come in and start any kind of money making deal, mm-hmm. that guy Mickey Cohen, he would have that guy beat the crap out of him, put him back on a plane and send him back to New York. Every time an Italian guy moved to L.A., Chief Daryl Parks would send his goon squad. I don't know if you guys saw that movie with Nick Nolte where he's just beating up a bunch of fools in that movie, L.A. Confidential.
Mm-hmm.
And it just beat Russell up. Crow. That really happened. So
Russell Crowe. Yeah.
These cops will just beat up Italians that will show up so they won't start no crews in L.A. because they had a crew, and that crew was the Italians and the LAPD.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I was busted with a mobster from here. His name was Mike Rosatello. He's passed away now. He's buried over in Palm Springs. And you had Jimmy the Weasel Fratiano, the book The Last Mafioso. They were all out here. So they, you know, they called them the Mickey Mouse Mafia, but they were hardcore.
So that what happened in American Me with when they went to go speak to the Italian guy at his house, that was actually real. There was actually a heroin dealer that was from Italy.
You know, I'm not sure about that, but there, one of the mobsters I knew who's passed away now, he was connected.
It's been hush hush. I didn't really hear about the LA Mafia, huh?
No, yeah. Well, if you look at Little Italy, that's Chinatown now.
Yeah, if you look them up, they were called the Milano family. I'm sure the family's still around. I think Pete Milano. Yeah, if you Google them, that's the name. I'm pretty sure.
I'm 11% Greek Italian. Me la pelas.
Yeah, there's only one. There's that little Italian restaurant.
Es un marrón.
There's that little Italian restaurant, the East Side Deli or whatever. Yeah. That's right next to Chinatown. I think that might be the last Little Italy place that's left. Right?
Yeah, because during when World War II, when World War II happened and Mussolini got involved, there was a backlash against Italians and Chinese people and Koreans and Japanese people. So a lot of the restaurants closed down. The original one that was supposed to be in Chinatown was the something turtle. It used to be right there where the gas station is in Chinatown. It was called something.
The one that looks like Spanish Mission style.
Yes,
I like that little place. It's been abandoned for years.
Abandoned forever. There used to be photos of Tom and the Soda. Let me look it up. What's up, Fool Rodrigo? What you got, dog?
Chilling, man. September 11th, Riverside, California. Viva Los Jokes.
Nice,
Brea.
So do you testimonies before ever, like at churches, you talk about your whole story?
Oh, it's funny. We just talking about that. My friend Mariano, Big Dog, he had a testimony that I was going to be involved in, and I had to work on myself a little bit with my character defects. So I'm back on working my stuff again. But, yeah, so when we get the chance, we love to share and stuff, and I got more stories to help people get, you know,
You were also an addict?
Yeah.
What was your drug of choice?
Everything. But
well, getting back, you heard us talk about Ben Affleck.
Oh, yeah.
You've been through that, right?
I was relating to everything you were saying. But, all the come down.
For our friends who are, we got listeners here.
We have people who reach out.
And always ask me, Felipe Esparza, I know that you're recovering. I just did some crack. I'm trying to stop. This is what I tell them. I said, listen, right now, only me and you know this. Mm. He goes, maybe you should go into a meeting right now if you want to. Or don't use tomorrow. And then the next day, don't use again. But walk into a meeting one day, get some help.
Yeah.
But what Ben Affleck was going through, we all go through that, right? The ups,
the
crying,
down, yeah.
Eating Jack in the Box.
Yeah. This is the things I've been telling myself, man. It's going to sound...
What helps you?
Well, I've learned because I'm actually paying attention because for a minute, I wasn't doing steps anymore. I was just just dry, you know?
Dry is bad.
Yeah. So I learned that I got to be accountable. I have to have transparency. limitations, people, places, and things, associations, and I have to be open-minded, and I can't be overconfident. And when I'm overconfident, like you were talking about, Ben, being like in like 2 days, and then you're like, you got it again, you start feeling that itch, and you have to go back to being open and telling people. Like, I asked them to be accountable to me. I got opened up to them today because it's pretty fresh, you know, what happened in my life. And I don't mean to take up the whole time of this, no, but you know what I'm saying?
No, you're the guest.
It's just like, and just like, that's just where I was at, you know. I was shooting myself down. I was sabotaging myself. And I was a lot of great things was happening in my life. And I told them, help me be accountable, you know, like ask me, how am I doing? And I got to be open, like, hey, you know, I feel like, I tell my wife now, like, I don't feel too good today, you know. And she goes, well, what do I do? I said, no, I'm, you know, when I get open, then it kind of leaves, you know. But if I stay quiet and isolate, then, it's, you know, the mind starts going, you know.
That's an important thing, because sometimes Felipe will turn to me and say something that scares me.
There you go.
No, shut up. Yeah. But it scares me. But I know now. I know now when you say something like, this morning I woke up and I felt like using, or I had a dream, or I smoked crack last night, right, or whatever. You'll tell me that.
And I start talking about it for a long time. I start talking about it for a long time, like it's a piece of cake. Mm.
But for a second, yeah, you seem a little too excited about it. Or something scares me when you say it.
And because then, it's different, because we've been through the war. So yeah. We're like, oh, yeah, I felt like this. And you're like,
and for me,
oh my God.
I'm just thinking, like, hey, it's cool. Okay, when is this next binge going to start?
Right.
And I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. But I try to be quiet now. I understand that right now. I understand now that you're just letting it out. Like you're saying, well, you're just releasing that, and then I don't need to do anything about it. I just need to listen to you.
What helps me right now about Wilson Alvarez is that I never thought about that, the overconfidence.
Ramirez.
Well, we're still
like
here.
Richard.
Yeah. It says right here.
Ramirez.
Wilson Antonio Ramirez.
Yeah. Yeah. You said Alvarez.
No, he didn't.
Let him go. He's
okay,
doing great.
No.
I'm on the roll, I guess.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Why would I say who the hell is Alvarez?
I don't know.
Who knows?
Well, what were you saying? What helps you?
You know, overconfident? Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out who's Alvarez. Anyways, so. Yeah, what really helped me was, Ramirez, when you said the overconfident.
Mm-hmm.
That right there is like the, when I'm mad.
That's the problem.
Oh, man. That's, when you get to the point where you're sober and then you're overconfident, that's when you ask your father, or you ask your wife, or you ask whoever's helping you out, you know what? I'm going to get into hiking now. And they buy you hiking shoes and a backpack. And then you saw that shit by the end of the day.
Yeah. You know what's funny? My friend, we went to my friend's house, and this is just after like a couple of things that happened. I'm cleaned up now, and I'm doing better. But he opened his front door just, you know, because he had to let somebody out. And the door said, front door, right? So I was like, hey, we needed one of those in my house, you know. So my wife knows when I'm leaving. And then everybody started telling jokes, like, chimney, like, he's going through the chimney. Like, it was just funny, you know, because you got to make jokes about that stuff because it's real. And like I said, like you and my wife, they have to deal with it. But they're there, and they're in the fight with us, you know.
Also, something good to know here that Hector Munoz noticed right here. Coming from the background you have, Paul, and our background, we have a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder. Like, you know, like we actually, like, we've seen shit. You know, like when you see a guy who just went to the Marines and he fought in Iraq. I mean, we didn't go out there, but we witnessed the same type of violence.
Yeah.
Like the shooting outside, you know. You know, you're like running outside and watching somebody get shot.
Yeah, you watched your friend die before he was 16.
I saw a friend of mine get shot in front of me. I saw this guy get stabbed when I was 8, and I never like dealt with it. You know, because I'm not gonna say we're white, but we don't have the
support system.
We don't have the support system. Like maybe, like do you ever have dreams that you're being shot at, or you're running, mm-hmm. or. You just drank a beer, then you regret it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have those. That's PTSD.
You wake up all like, oh.
I had one last night, man. I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I don't know what to do, man.
Yeah, it's like that. But yeah, the post traumatic stress disorder. I mean, I go to meetings.
You pray.
I have a sponsor that doesn't take any bull. Yeah, I get more open now. I don't isolate. I go to church, but
isolate.
I was living a double life still. You know, I wouldn't tell everybody everything. Oh, I'm good. I wouldn't say I was good, but I'm like, I'm working it out. Because I knew I'd be lying by saying good to myself. So I would say, like, I'm little by little, I'm getting there, you know. So I didn't sound like, you know, they always talk about that in church, like, oh, if you always say you're good, but are you good? So I would say, like, I'm working it out, you know. So I talk to people. I try and get as open as possible to people that are going to listen, especially hitting meetings. And then working the steps, which if you don't work the steps, then you're just doing homework assignments, right? That's what I heard in a meeting one day, and it stuck. And it's like, just got to go no matter what. My friends tell me, no matter what, you got a gangster that, they tell me. No matter what, you got a gangster that. He was mad. He was like, my homie was like, that's like a, he said it another way, but he was like, it's a girl move, like what you did, like. It's a girl move. Why? You know, like the hardcore ones tell you, like, yeah, it's a girl move, bro.
But at the same time, like, Felipe, I mean, the culture you're coming from, not Latino culture, but the ghetto.
The ghetto.
The hood culture. That mentality. Talking about this stuff is taboo. Talking about your feelings, right. Talking about, you know, a scary dream you had, talking about fear of, you know, falling off the wagon again or whatever it might be.
That you're gay.
I mean, it's easy. It's hard to hold it in, but that's what you're taught to do about anything like that, about any sort of feelings.
I remember, like, I was, like if something, like, just say I would see something sad, and, like, I'm trying to get sad. No llores, cabrón, pinche güey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't cry, cabrón. They would tell me.
Damn.
Excuse me. They'd say, amárrate los huevos.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how do you do that? Like, how do you... I don't know how to, I was like lost. I was like, man, I don't have it in me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, you think something's wrong with you for having this tension in your brain. Like, how do I deal with this?
It was tough.
And then come the drugs and alcohol to quiet it down, mm-hmm. You know? And that's too bad.
Yeah, that's true, man. I find myself too, like, you know, I'm a, like, isolated sometimes, man. Like, but that's the best. I mean, when I was in rehab, isolation is the devil's playground.
It is.
You have too many. You start thinking about so many stuff, huh?
Yeah, I give hugs now. I didn't used to hug. I'd go and sit down in the chair. You know, I wouldn't. I would hug only who I knew, and if I didn't know,
you can Huggy Bear.
Yeah, I get Huggy Bear on everybody. You have to hug people, and you have to get out of yourself.
Hug,
you know, because it's important, especially for your own spirituality. Because once I start isolating, then it's like you said, the devil's playground.
You're going
starts,
crazy, dude.
Yeah. It's Scruncho.
Shout out to Kukulakan Ramuri.
Scruncho said the same thing. Like, all I needed was a hug. I was just a kid and needed a hug.
We had a guy here named Scruncho. He's also a comedian.
Drug dealer. He never used, but he was
up for Mike Epps. He told this funny story about getting locked up for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in prison. No, he was in jail. He's a Crip. And he saw one of his homies. He was with the essays. So, man, me and my homie, we tried to make it. We had a little meeting.
The
two of us. And he went to his side, went to my side. And they told we try to get both sides together, the Mexicans and the blacks. And I said, "Well, how'd it go, man? Oh man, the SAs jumped me in. They let the blacks jump him.
Oh my god!
Yeah, they didn't bring peace.
Getting ready for that gangster utopia.
Yeah, they thought they could make a change.
Not gonna happen. Not gonna happen.
Threw that out there. That's hilarious.
That was hilarious, man. What happened? Oh, they let the SAs jump the fuck out of me. Let me jump here.
So we just did messages to each other. That's crazy.
It was funny, man. Because were you in sports as a kid?
Yeah, play ball.
Were you a little boy? Were you a little boy, Paul? Was there something you wanted to be besides the life that you had?
Shoot, Supreme Court judge. But I went way off that.
Fucking judge, sniper over.
No, my uncle was the first Mexican Supreme Court judge in California.
What's his name?
Cruz Reynoso.
So, Cruz Reynoso. He's the one that went after those kids, the Orange County, because they didn't want to let the Latinos into the class.
You know, I don't know. He's way up there. When Cesar Chavez was working in the fields, he was the one doing the laws. So he was the one in Sacramento getting the laws passed that helped, you know, the Mexican, the Chicanos, you know.
Wow.
So that was him. And there's movies about him, like sowing the seeds of justice. So that's what I wanted to, but I went the other way, you know.
Wow. And you?
I wanted to be a baseball star.
Me too, bro. And a rapper.
My brother actually got drafted by the Indians in 1990.
Oh, wow. What's his name?
Cesar Ramirez. No, he got drafted minor leagues, rookie ball, but he never. He went
still,
to college.
Man, he got the call, man.
Got the call, man. He got,
the
you
call
know,
is exciting.
91. It is.
Ah. It was, I wanted to, like, besides, like, when I go to colleges, sometimes I tell myself, man, I wish I would have went here for 4 years. instead of doing what I did.
You can still go, Doug.
Or, hell no, I don't want to go now.
Spring break, Doug.
You know, it's funny, I just wanted to go, but without no classes.
Right, right, right.
Dude, there was fools that would go to my college. They wouldn't even go to...
They're called janitors, bro.
Nah, who would go? Because those big old lecture halls, you can just sit in.
Oh, what a funny ass
story. Picking up chicks, that's all they would do.
In San Francisco, there's a big court building or a library with, I think, 70 steps that go all the way down, right? But it's a library, and it goes, people are reading up there, they're smoking weed, they're hanging out. And we have another comedian, Martin Moreno. He's from Wilmington, we passed by those steps. He's from Wilmington, man. He's seen some bad shit too, from Wilmas. And then he saw those steps, and he goes, "Ah, man, I just want to sit on those steps like those people would." And do what, bro? You gonna read? Nah, I just want to sit. You can sit right now, stupid. But you know, I know what he means. I know what he meant. He want to be like them, like to just sit there and be normal,
right?
Without thinking about stuff. I go through a lot. That's why I love when I do my comedy. I love traveling. I love meeting people. I like to sit in places where no homie has ever sat at it. But then you don't get that too, Alvarez. When you, no, not Alvarez.
Alvarez.
What the fuck?
It's the school. Sons of Anarchy. Sons of Anarchy.
It's
Emilio's name. Son of Anarchy.
But you don't get that when you sit there and you go, Marcus, you know what? If my homie could just see this, this will change their lives.
Yeah.
So
we're fortunate, eh? We're here.
So Paul, you said you had this dream to be a Supreme Court justice, you know?
I could see him, man.
What made you? And you didn't have a drug vice. That wasn't your thing. What made you attracted to gang life?
You know,
and how old were you when you started getting involved in that?
I think like junior high. You know, you start seeing that. You know, we had friends. You know, we used to you know play together and all that stuff and whatever. But then we started ditching, and then you see in the hood. Really, what you see is you see the cops busting the older guys that you think are cool. You know, they're dressed really nice. They have the nice cars. You see the cops busting them, and they're like, you know, you become anti-cop automatically.
Yeah.
You know, and actually a lot of them are there to help us, but you become anti-cop. And then you see that, and then before you know, they're the enemy. These are the guys I want to hang with. Next thing you know, you're hanging out with them. And next thing you know, you get in that position as a gang member. You start recruiting, and that's what I did. I started recruiting. You know, start recruiting people. And
so it's like a little bit of power, prestige, that sort
of
thing.
Yeah, it's a family too, though, man.
And
I ain't going to lie. A lot of it was, it's a fun life. I've still got people this day from the hood that are brothers. You know, I consider them brothers. You know, they're still my good friends. But just I've chosen another path that hopefully they can follow.
Yeah.
And not only that, with the Kill Rim movie, hopefully more people will follow.
Yeah, definitely.
When did the movie come out?
Yeah, we were shooting for late September, which is next month. But due to that, we had to fire an editor and get the new editors, which are 10 times better. And then, so we're looking probably mid-October. So the decision is going to be made within the next 2 weeks.
Are you sitting there with the editor, where they're editing hours?
Yeah, next week. Next week, yeah, I'll be sitting with them.
Is this going to be released at a church? Can we go see it? Or we
I'll invite you guys to the premiere. We'll have a premiere.
They're deciding that. They're talking to distribution and all this stuff right now.
Yeah, we're going to have, but we're definitely going to have a premiere, and we're definitely going to show it in some churches. But some, I think, won't because of the subject matter, you know, even in the
You're involved with Victory Outreach?
No.
No?
No. Okay. I go to a Calvary Chapel.
Calvary? Okay.
Yeah, I go to Calvary Chapel.
That one was started in Whittier, right? Whittier?
No, that one was started in Costa Mesa by Chuck Smith.
And that's what Kilroy followed
Chuck
as
Smith.
Well. That's where he went
Kilroy,
into first.
Kilroy started when he started at Calvary Chapel, and he'd been through Victory Outreach, and then I forget where he goes now. I think Living Word.
Victory Outreach.
My brother Angel... He's in Mexico now, but he was in rehab and Victory Outreach. He went to a lot of rehab, but Victory Outreach was the one that they kicked him out.
They kicked him out of Victory Outreach?
Oh, they kicked him out.
That's
they were going to jump him, bro. Because they were fasting, and everybody was not supposed to eat all day on Wednesday. And that fool, like when everybody was sleeping, he snuck out of the house and went to get a Big Mac, bro.
In Mexico?
Here in United States. Here in the City of Commerce. And he ate it, bro. And then when they were selling chocolate, my brother was selling his chocolate and asking for tips and was keeping the tips, bro, to buy regular food.
Oh, my goodness.
My brother would find a scam anywhere. That's how addicts work.
Yeah.
And I don't care. Sometimes, man, how do you catch yourself
for not running a scam, because scams always come to you here. Like, I don't know how it is.
How do you stop thinking like a hustler, like a scam?
Sometimes, you know, like in my I was doing stand up comedy, and I would run. Okay, I would tell myself I can't be doing this. Like only a couple of times, like the money was $200, and they had told me I got to pay these comedians. So I was like telling them, okay, like listen, man, I'm gonna give you $100 on paper, but you're gonna give me $65 back right now. And they would just say yes, no questions asked. But see, I knew that they were going to say yes because they're not part of the life. Mm. But I know I'm getting over on them. Uh-huh. But I didn't see nothing wrong with it till later on, you know, my sobriety started catching up to my personality because I'm not running the steps. Mm-hmm. So I'm still being scandalous.
Right, you're basically bullying those guys.
I'm still dry. Yeah, yeah. How did you get over like a person of the struggle that you went through?
The behavior.
I mean,
Yeah. Working the steps, right?
Well, I worked the steps in the beginning and I stopped. And when I stopped, I kept scheming. My character defect showed. And so now, as I'm reading, I see, and I'm only getting to step one. I haven't even done it yet. But just the fact that what I see is I'm understanding everything the book's saying. Like, I don't read a lot. I read scripts, and that's a struggle sometimes. But actually opening the book, making myself read, because I don't feel I have another chance. Like, I really feel like I got to do it. So, like, when I read it and I see all this stuff going on that I'm doing, or I'll ask my wife for 20, and then, hey, I'll ask my son, hey, you got 10? And then I'll get 10, and I got 30 now. So it's like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just I gotta talk in love and in peace. It's just, I can't be doing things. I got to limit my actions with everything. It's crazy.
Shout out to Mario Cruz. He said, give me something to draw.
I think there's plenty to draw already on this
podcast. Bro, come on, man. There's plenty to draw, bro.
He started watching late, though.
He could draw the whole day as a judge.
That's true.
He started watching late, he said. He came in late.
Yeah.
That's all I had.
Show's coming up.
September 11th, Riverside. And I'll be in Brea with Rodrigo Torres and the Homie Show after that show on September 5th. Me up at Rodrigo Torres Jr. at Yahoo.mail for free passes. Yeah, man.
Where can people go to a webpage to support the movie?
Kilroy the Movie on Facebook right now. Okay. KilroyTheMovie.com will be up right in 2 weeks, but Kilroy the Movie on Facebook. You can follow there. You can find everybody.
There's some videos there, too, that we'll share on your fan page, too. But they have some videos. Like, you have a couple rap songs, right?
Is there a trailer on the soundtrack?
Is there a trailer on there, too?
The trailer's coming.
Good. And we'll share that, too, when it's out.
But the thing cool about the movie, too, is we got a guy doing the score who worked on Wonder Woman, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Nice.
You know, we're trying to do it right with our minimal budget and you know, and that, I would really encourage anybody out there, like, looking in to get movies, is while everybody else, because SAG, you know, when you get in SAG, don't get me wrong, they have, you know, the producers, they got a lot of go-to guys, and, you know, so I encourage everybody out there trying to make a movie, rather than trying to chase investors, just start doing it.
Just do it, right?
Just do it. Start doing it.
What's the hustle,
then,
right?
Then you put it in there, but you sell it, it makes money, then you can invest in another movie. You know, just start doing it while everybody else is chasing, be the one who does it. You know, that's what I would say, you know.
This movie right here, did people help you budget it, or is something you were saving up?
No. It was ours. It was ours. Me and my executive co-producer. So, you know, so my friend Pete Billinger, he's the one who helped write Black Klansman. He's my partner in the film.
Oh, wow, he did?
Yeah, he got the book.
Shout out to the Black Klansman. I want to see that movie, by the way.
Yeah, the book.
So he wrote the book?
Yeah, he helped put it together. Okay. Yeah, so with Ron, and, you know, so he was the co-executive producer, so he funded most of it, you know, so nice. Thank God, you know, but still, it's like, I just encourage everybody to do it, because everybody else is running around trying to for the same, in the same pot, start doing it, and get it on Netflix, get it on...
That's how you did your comedy, right?
Yeah,
we did it ourselves.
How about, people say, oh, man, these film schools are so expensive, it's only for white people. You can learn, tell people they can learn on the internet. Just Google it. How do I make a movie?
No film school.
No, you don't need no film school, right?
No.
You just need the ganas and the heart to do something.
Just start doing it. Start editing on your computer. You have a free program. Exactly. And I went to film school right here in East L.A., East L.A. Skill Center. I already knew how to film. I already knew how to do that.
You go there to learn how to make flyers.
Exactly. No, but I'm just saying.
About your Shane Brown video, eh?
Like, I didn't learn a whole lot. But the paper, basics, the paper right? looks nice. The paper looks nice when you're going in to talk to an investor or somebody. The paper looks nice that you have, that you finished all these semesters of film school and you learned editing, you learned filming, you learned
lighting, right?
Is there any skill set? Is that the one by the General Hospital or the one by the courtroom?
By Lincoln Park.
Okay, with that one, this.
Yeah, Lincoln Park.
I went there once, man. And that, if you want to go there for a carpenter, plumber, exactly. Bro, how did you find film school in that skill center?
It's in there somewhere.
You by yourself,
there.
Huh?
It's in there, dude. I just Googled, man.
Department.
But the thing is, you don't. But the thing is, you don't learn as much in those classroom settings as you do just doing it. I think that's what he's saying.
And like, there's a website. There's a website called No Film School. Go to that a lot.
Mm-hmm. You know, everything's on there. Fermin Mariachi has a book too, right?
It's like an
anti-film
school sort of.
And what's up with Kilroy? What's he doing these days?
He was supposed to be here, but he was in Africa.
He broke his hip, I think. Right?
He was actually doing a missionary trip for a month long. He gets to Africa. Now he's 80 years old, mind you. He gets to Africa, falls on the third day, breaks his knee, bro.
Oh, his knee.
Now, Kilroy was a racist, bro. He used to hate black people, bro.
God changed his life.
So the third day there, rather than he should have came home, dude. He should have came home. But what happened? He was in so much pain. He just said, I'm going to stick it out. So he broke his knee, stuck it out the rest of the time for the love of the people from Africa. He stayed there and came back. And now he's recovering. Because of that, he's still laid up, basically.
He got an infection, right, or something like that, because he didn't take care of it.
They had to re-break it, right?
Yeah. So then that messed up his other hip.
So he was doing missionary work over there?
Yeah.
Preaching and making houses?
The prisons?
No, just preaching. Just preaching.
The word?
Preaching and helping, like giving, you know, I think it's sheep or chickens. They give that. That's a big thing to give to them. And, you know, buying stuff. So
this guy, Paul, wants to ask you, what video editing software would you recommend for a beginner to use? Because something like Adobe Premiere has a huge learning curve.
iMovie.
You know what? I would
practice editing on your phone first.
Okay, well, it depends on what computer he has. If he wants the easiest
Final
one,
Cut or...
the easiest one's Final Cut.
Yeah, Final Cut.
You have
Final
to have Cut Apple, Pro. Right? You have to have a Mac. Yeah. But I use Adobe Premiere, and then there's another one
that's
called...
That's the one he's having a hard time learning.
Yeah, but that's the one to stick with, man. And then the other one is one from Japan that's really good. It's CyberLink Power Director. But if you put
you
all
do that
your,
one on your phone too.
If you put all your time to doing CyberLink Power Director though, later on, like when you start doing Hollywood stuff, you're going to need Premiere.
Yeah.
So you might as well learn Premiere or Final Cut now, and I prefer Premiere.
Okay, there you have it, Brandon.
Oh, by the way, Avid has a free one. You could download a free editing software from Avid too. That's pretty good.
And Avid is used by professionals too. Yeah.
Dope.
Was you need any shout outs?
Yeah, man. Shout outs to Laredo and
shout out
Lubbock,
to that restaurant Laredo, Quinto Sol vegetarian restaurant. Man, some good vegetarian.
Oh, it was
Mexican
bomb,
food,
dude. It was really good, dude.
Vegan, we're vegan, man. I'm vegan. Mm-hmm. People don't believe me because I'm so big. What the hell, you eat crops?
I want to give a shout out. One shout out. I forgot the list of other shout outs, but this is to what is his name? Alex Marine. Alex Marine.
Oh.
From Boyle Heights.
Shout out to Mariner from Hilo in Hawaii. His phone just... Oh, sorry, babe.
No, I wanted to say this.
His phone just came back on. Go ahead.
No, I said give a shout out to Alex Marine from this girl, Vero Susi.
The big fan.
Who is, I guess, I don't know if she's his girlfriend, but she loves him and wants him to know how much she loves him and all that stuff. So ask him.
Wait, are
you
LeBron now?
No. I don't know. She just requested
Party
that.
Boy
so.
What's his name?
Alex Marine. From
Alex Marine.
Boyle
what's
Heights.
Up, fool?
Hey, can I give one shout out?
Yeah,
man.
Hey, I want to give a shout out to...
bring him up, bro. Bring him over here. Let me see
Paul
him.
Espinoza. Yeah, He's an actor. He's in Kilroy, too.
I've seen him in stuff before.
He's...
what's up?
He plays... Paul? Tell him who you play in the movie.
What's that? Pretty Boy?
Who do you play?
Pretty Boy, right? Yeah,
Richard Resendez.
Diablo.
Yeah, I was just a background, but I got booked and thrown in my cell.
Hey, bro, I thought you'd get in, man.
Yeah, I got me a place in that.
You've been on other stuff before, though?
Little things. Well, actually, I was in, I played a small part as a cartel leader in Peppermint.
Peppermint?
It's going to be coming out, I think, on the 7th, I believe.
Jennifer Garner, right?
Yeah, if it didn't get edited out, but, you know.
You never know, man.
You never know. But hopefully, I show up on that movie.
You grew up also in L.A.?
L.A. County in San Gabriel Valley.
Oh, yeah?
La Puente.
La Puente by the hop, people.
By the hop.
The
Red Bull.
The hop's
up in Del Rio. I used to love the hop. That's the only place where you can hook up on a mom and a daughter.
That's true. Peppers, remember Peppers?
Peppers, damn, you're old school.
Red Onion?
Red Onion, damn.
Ora.
Just Willie, bro.
Red Onion, bro.
His eyes came
that's
up.
Where right? I, that's, like, where I, that's where I learned my chops, bro.
Ora. Over the Red Onion and the Jungle something over there.
Old schoolers.
Oh,
there.
Man, Red Onion. They used to be another one, man. They used to have one in downtown by the Bonaventure Hotel, and they had one La Puente. They were called Galaxia or... Or Galaxy or something like that, man.
I don't remember that one.
I'm old school, right to party at the CSO right there on First Street. And Don Quixote, Señor Papa, Don Quixote.
Man, Don Quixote
Mr. Mr. Jason Almonte. Oh, yeah. I used to, when I used to go out, bro, I had it all planned out, bro. Tuesday nights, I used to go for 2-for-1 drinks at Quiet Cannon. Wednesday nights, I used to go to the Riviera, I think, or somewhere. I don't forget where I went on Thursdays, but Thursdays I went back to Quiet Cannon 2-for-1. Fridays, I would go to Caddy's over there on Friday nights, Caddy's. And Saturday nights, I used to go to the Riviera right there in Santa Monica. You got to make sure when you get there, man, not to go in the wrong door because the other door is all gay and transvestites. But the other part is Mexicanos, Salvadorians, fucking salsa, and a taco truck.
So what, when you... How many drinks do you think you'd drink on a 2-for-1 night?
I wasn't drinking that time.
You just wanted to go on a pickup or
I used
what?
To go with BB, my friend Ruben Hottingy, and that was cheap, bro. Oh. He's like Costanza.
Oh, he's so cheap.
Okay, man. This is how cheap he was. We would get there to Quiet Cannons at 8. People didn't get there till 11 or 10. People are still golfing when we get there.
Four.
We were there because we didn't want to pay to get in, man. We were there to scam on chicks, man.
Tight, dog. Shout out to Rach underscore 1355 show in Lubbock that came out. And also Peter Batras from Eagle Pass, Texas, man. That was in.
What's up, fool? Shout out to Alex DeLarge. He helped us out on the Mezcalito video with his Impala. And I took Lisa cruising around the block.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
What's
up, fool? I'm afraid we were going to crash it.
Where can they find the movie when it comes out? On what webpage?
Kilroy the Movie on Facebook.
Kilroy the Movie on Facebook. And that was a K, people.
K-I-L-R-O-Y.
And you're on Instagram. I know that. We follow each other.
Instagram or actor underscore. No, yeah. Actor underscore Wilson underscore Ramirez.
And San Gabriel, where we can find you at?
P. Espinosa.
P. Espinosa, man. Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah, man. Thank you for being on our show, man. And we're going to promote the movie when it comes out. What's up, Rodrigo?
Chilling, dog.
All right, man.
Looking forward to it.
Shot caller now. Right on. All right, fool.
Tiefpreistage bei Hagebaumarkt. Jetzt zugreifen. Leuchtende Chrysanthemenbüsche. In verschiedenen Farben. Circa 40 cm Durchmesser im 19 cm Topf für nur 3,33. Hagebaumarkt. Hier hilft man sich.